Part 5. Highway 50. Excused early. 1. There were dead animals lying in a rough ring around the truck, buzzards and coyotes mostly, but Steve barely noticed them. He was all but eaten alive with the need to get out of here. The steep sides of the China pit seemed to loom over him like the sides of an open grave. He reached the truck a little ahead of the others. Cynthia and Mary were flanking David, each of them holding one of the boy's arms, although he did not seem to be staggering, and tore open the passenger door. "Steve, what?" Cynthia began. "Get in. Ask questions later." He butt-boosted her up into the seat. "Push over. Make room." She did. Steve turned to David. "Are you going to be a problem?" David shook his head. His eyes were dull and apathetic, but that didn't completely convince Steve. The boy was nothing if not resourceful. He had proved that before he and Cynthia ever met him. He boosted David into the truck, then looked at Mary. "Get in. We'll have to bundle a little, but if we're not friends by now..." She scrambled into the cab and closed the door as Steve hurried around the front of the truck, stepping on a buzzard as he went. It was like stepping on a pillowcase stuffed with bones. How long had the boss been gone? A minute? Two? He had no idea. Any sense of time he might once have had was completely shot. He swung into the driver's seat and allowed himself just one moment to wonder what they'd do if the engine wouldn't start. The answer, nothing, came at once. He nodded at it, turned the key, and the engine roared to life. No suspense there, thank God. A second later, they were rolling. He turned the Ryder truck in a big circle, skirting the heavy machinery, the powder magazine, and the field office. Between these latter two buildings was the dusty police cruiser, driver's door open, front seat area plastered with Collie and Trajan's blood. Looking at it, into it, made Steve feel cold and a little dizzy, the way he felt when he looked down from a tall building. "Fuck you," Mary said softly, turning to look back at the car. "Fuck you, and I hope you hear me." They hit a bump, and the truck rattled terrifically. Steve flew up and off the seat, his thighs biting into the bottom arc of the steering wheel, his head bumping the ceiling. He heard a muffled clatter as the stuff in the back flew around. The boss's stuff, mostly. "Hey," Cynthia said nervously. "Don't you think you got the hammer a little too far down for rock top, big boy?" "No," Steve said. He looked into the mirror outside his window as they began tearing up the gravel road which led to the rim of the pit. It was the drift opening he was looking for, but he couldn't see it. It was on the other side of the truck. About halfway to the rim, they hit another bump, a bigger one, and the truck actually seemed to leave the road for an instant or two. The headlights corkscrewed, then dipped as the truck dove deep on its springs. Both Mary and Cynthia screamed. David did not. He sat crooked between them, a life-sized doll, half on the seat and half in Mary's lap. "Slow down!" Mary screamed. "If you go off the road, we'll go all the way to the bottom. Slow down, you asshole!" "No," he repeated, not bothering to add that going off this road, which was as wide as a California freeway, was the least of his worries. He could see the pit rim ahead. The sky above it was now a dark, brightening violet instead of black. He looked past the others and into the mirror outside the passenger window, searching for the dark mouth of the tunnel in the darker well of the China pit, Can Tak and Can Ta, and then didn't have to bother. A square of white light, too brilliant to look at, suddenly lit up the pit floor. It lashed out of the China shaft like a burning fist and filled the cab of the truck with savage brilliance.
"Jesus, what's that?" Mary screamed, throwing a hand up to shield her eyes.
"The boss," Steve said softly. A heavy thud seemed to run directly beneath them, a muffled battering ram of sound. The truck began to shiver like a frightened dog.
Steve heard broken rock and gravel begin to slide. He looked out his window and saw, in the dying glare of the blast, black nets of PVC pipe, emitters and distribution heads, sliding down the pit face. The porphyry was in motion. China Pit was falling in on itself.
"Oh my God, we're gonna be buried alive," Cynthia moaned.
"Well, let's see," Steve said. "Hang on." He jammed the gas pedal to the floor. It didn't have far to go, either. And the truck's engine responded with an angry scream. "Almost there, honey," he thought at it. "Almost there. Come on. Work with me, beautiful. Be there for me." That battering ram rumble went on and on beneath them, seeming at one moment to fade, then coming back like a waveform. As they reached the rim of the pit, Steve saw a boulder the size of a gas station go bouncing down the slope on their right. And, more ominous than the rumble from below them, he heard a growing whisper from directly beneath them. It was, Steve knew, the gravel surface of the road. The truck was northbound. The road was headed south. In only a few moments, it would collapse down into the pit like a dropped carpet runner.
"Run, you bitch!" he screamed, pounding on the wheel with his left fist. "Run for me! Now! Now!"
The Ryder truck surged over the rim of the pit like a clumsy, yellow-nosed dinosaur. For a moment, the issue was still in doubt, as the crumbled earth under the rear wheels ran out and the truck wallowed first sideways and then backwards.
"Go!" Cynthia screamed. She sat forward, clutching the dashboard. "Oh, please go! For God's sake, get us out of here!"
She was thrown back in the seat as the wheels found purchase again. Just enough. For a moment, the headlights went on stabbing at the lightening sky, and then they were rushing across the rim, headed north. From behind them, out of the pit, rose an endless flume of dust, as if the earlier freak storm had started up all over again, only confined to this one location. It rose in the sky like a pyre. 2. The trip down the north side of the embankment was less adventurous. By the time they were running across the 2 miles of desert between the pit and the town, the sky in the east was a bright salmon pink. And, as they passed the bodega with a fallen sign, the sun's upper arc broke over the horizon. Steve jammed on the brakes just past the bodega at the south end of Desperation's Main Street.
"Holy shit," Cynthia murmured in a low voice.
"Mother McCree," Mary said, and put a hand to her temple as if her head hurt. Steve could say nothing at all. Until now, he and Cynthia had only seen Desperation in the dark, or through veils of blowing sand, and what they had seen had been glimpsed in frantic little snatches, their perceptions honed to a narrow focus by the mortal simplicities of survival. When you were trying to stay alive, you just saw what you had to see. The rest went by the board. Now, however, he was seeing it all. The wide street was empty except for one lazily blowing tumbleweed. The sidewalks were drifted deep with sand, drifted completely under in places. Broken window glass twinkled here and there. Trash had blown everywhere. Signs had fallen down. Power lines lay snarled in the street like broken distributor heads. And the American West's marquee now lay in the street like a grand old yacht that has finally gone on the rocks. The one remaining letter, a large black R, had finally fallen off. And everywhere there were dead animals, as if some lethal chemical spill had taken place. He saw scores of coyotes, and from the doorway of Bud's Suds there ran a long, curving pigtail of dead rats, some half covered with the sand skirling about in a light morning breeze. Dead scorpions lay on the fallen leprechaun weather vane. They looked to Steve like shipwreck survivors who had died badly on a barren island. Buzzards lay in the street and on the roofs like dropped heaps of soot. And thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, David said. His voice was dead, expressionless. And you shall say, Take heed to yourselves, that you should not go up into the mount.
Steve looked into his rearview mirror, saw the embankment of the China Pit looming against the brightening sky, saw the dust still pouring out of its sterile caldera, and shuddered.
Go not up into the mount, or touch the border of it. Whosoever toucheth the mount shall surely be put to death. There shall not be a hand touch it, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through. Whether it be beast or man, it shall not live.
The boy looked up at Mary, and his face began to shiver apart and become human. His eyes filled with tears.
David, she began, I'm alone. Do you get it? We came upon the mountain and God slaughtered them all, my family. Now I'm alone.
She put her arms around him and pressed his face against her.
Say, Chief, Cynthia said, and put a hand on Steve's arm, let's blow this shithole of a town and find us a cold beer. What do you say?
3. Highway 50 again.
Down this way, Mary said. We're close now.
They had passed the Carver's RV. David had turned his face against Mary's breasts again as they approached it, and she put her arms around his head and held him. For almost 5 minutes he didn't move, didn't even seem to breathe. The only way she could tell for sure that he was alive was by the feel of his tears, slow and hot, wetting her shirt. In a way, she was glad to feel them, thought them a good sign. The storm had also struck the highway, she saw. Sand covered it completely in places, and Steve had to wallow the rider truck through several drifts in low gear.
Would they have closed it? Cynthia asked Steve once. The cops? Nevada Public Works? Whatever?
He shook his head. Probably not, but you can bet there wasn't much of anyone out last night. Lots of interstate truckers holed up in Ely and Austin.
There it is, Mary cried, and pointed at a sun star twinkling about a mile ahead of them. 3 minutes later, they were pulling up to Deirdre's Acura. Do you want to come in the car with me, David? She asked, assuming the damn thing will even start, that is.
David shrugged.
The cop let you keep your keys? Cynthia asked.
No, but if I'm lucky...
She hopped out of the truck, landed in a loose dune of sand, and made her way to the car. Looking at it brought Peter back in a rush. Peter, who had been so goddamned absurdly proud of his James Dickey monograph, never guessing that the planned follow-up wasn't going to happen. The car doubled in her sight, then blurred into prisms. Chest hitching, she wiped an arm across her eyes, then knelt and felt around under the front bumper. At first, she couldn't find what she was looking for, and it all seemed like too much. Why did she want to follow the rider truck to Austin in this car anyway? Surrounded by memories. By Peter. She laid her cheek against the bumper. Soon it would be too hot to touch, but for now it was still night cool, and let herself cry. She felt a hand touch hers, tentatively, and looked around. David was standing there, his gaunt, too old face hanging over a slim boy's chest in a blood-stained baseball t-shirt. He looked at her solemnly, not quite holding her hand, but touching her fingers with his, as if he would like to hold it. What's wrong, Mary?
I can't find the little box, she said, and pulled in a large, watery sniff.
The little magnetic box with the spare key in it. It was under the front bumper, but I guess it must have fallen off. Or maybe the boys who took our license plate took that, too.
Her mouth twisted, and she began to cry again. He dropped to his knees beside her, wincing as something pulled in his back. She saw, even through her tears, the bruises on his throat where Audrey had tried to choke him. Ugly black-purple blotches like thunderheads.
Shh, Mary, he said, and felt along the inside of the bumper with his own hand. She could hear his fingers fluttering in that darkness and suddenly wanted to cry out, "Be careful! There might be spiders! Spiders!"
Then he showed her a small gray box. "Give it a shot, why don't you? If it doesn't start..."
He shrugged to show it didn't matter much, one way or the other. There was always the truck.
Yes, always the truck.
Except Peter had never ridden in the truck, and maybe she did want the smell of him a little longer. The feel of him.
"That's a nice set of cantaloupes, ma'am," he'd said, and then touched her breast.
The memory of his smell, his touch, his voice, the glasses he wore when he drove. Those things would hurt, but...
"Yeah, I'll come with you," David said. They were kneeling in front of Deirdre Finney's car, facing each other that way. "If it starts, that is. And if you want..."
"Yes," she said. "I do want."
4.
Steve and Cynthia joined them, helping them to their feet.
"I feel like I'm 108, Mary said.
"Don't worry, you don't look a day over 89, Steve said, and smiled when she made as if to pop him one. "Do you really want to try making Austin in that little car? What if it gets stuck in the sand?"
"One thing at a time. We're not even sure it'll start, are we, David?"
"No," David said in a kind of sigh. He was going away from her again. Mary could feel it, but she didn't know what to do about it.
He stood with his head bent, looking at the Acura's grill as if all the secrets of life and death were there, the emotion draining out of his face again, leaving it distant and thoughtful. One hand was wrapped loosely around the gray metal Magna Cube with the spare key in it.
"If it does start, we'll caravan," she told Steve. "Me behind you. If I get stuck, we'll hop into the truck. I don't think we will, though. It isn't such a bad car, actually. If my goddamn sister-in-law just hadn't used it as a dope stash..."
Her voice trembled, and she closed her lips tightly.
"I don't think we'll have to go far to get in the clear," David said, without looking up from the Acura's grill.
30 miles? 40? Then open road."
Mary smiled at him. "I hope you're right."
"There's a slightly more important question," Cynthia said. "What are we going to tell the police about all this? The real police, I mean."
No one said anything for a moment. Then David, still looking at the grill of the Acura, said,
"The front part. Let them figure out the rest for themselves."
"I don't get you," Mary said. She actually thought she did, but wanted to keep him talking. Wanted him out here with the rest of them mentally as well as physically.
"I'll tell about how we had flat tires and the bad cop took us back to town. How he got us to go with him by saying there was a guy out in the desert with a rifle. Mary, you tell about how he stopped you and Peter. Steve, you tell about how you were looking for Johnny and Johnny phoned you. I'll say how we escaped after he took my mother away. How we went to the theater. How we called you on the phone, Steve. Then you can tell how you came to the theater, too. And that's where we were all night, in the theater."
"We never went up to the pit at all," Steve mused.
"Testing it. Tasting it."
David nodded. The bruises on his throat glared in the strengthening sun. Already the day was beginning to grow hot.
"Right," he said.
"And... sorry, David, I have to. Your dad? What about him?"
"Went looking for my mom. He wanted me to stay with you guys in the theater, so I did."
"We never saw anything," Cynthia said.
"No, not really."
He opened the Magna Cube, took out the key inside, gave it to Mary.
"Why don't you try the engine?"
"In a sec. What are the authorities going to think about what they do find? All the dead people and dead animals. And what will they say? What will they give out?"
Steve said, "There are people who believe a flying saucer crashed not too far from here, back in the 40s. Did you know that?"
She shook her head.
"In Roswell, New Mexico. According to the story, there were even survivors. Astronauts from another world. I don't know if any of it's true, but it might be. The evidence suggests that something pretty outrageous happened in Roswell. The government covered it up, whatever it was. The same way they'll cover this up.
Cynthia punched his arm. Pretty paranoid, Cookie.
He shrugged. As to what they'll think. Poison gas, maybe. Some weird shit that belched out of a pocket in the earth and made people crazy. And that's not so far wrong, is it?
Really?
No, Mary said. I think the most important thing is that we all tell the same story, just the way David outlined it.
Cynthia shrugged, and a ghost of her old pert, who-gives-a-shit look came over her face.
Like if we break down and tell them what really happened, they're going to believe us, right?
Maybe they wouldn't, Steve said, but if it's all the same to you, I'd rather not spend the next 6 weeks taking polygraph tests and looking at ink blots when I could spend them looking at your exotic and mysterious face.
She punched his arm again, a little harder this time. She caught David watching this byplay and nodded to him.
You think I got a mysterious and exotic face?
David turned away, studied the mountains to the north.
Mary went around to the driver's door of the Acura and opened it, reminding herself she'd have to pull the seat up before she could drive. Peter had been a foot taller than she. The glove box was open from when she'd been pawing around in it for the registration, but surely a bulb as small as the one in there couldn't draw more than a trickle of juice, could it? Well, it wasn't exactly life and death in any...
Oh, my Lord, Steve said in a soft, strengthless voice. Oh, my dear Lord, look.
She turned. On the horizon, looking small at this distance, was the north face of the China Pit embankment. Above it was a gigantic cloud of dark gray dust. It hung in the sky, still connected to the pit by a hazy umbilicus of rising dust and powdered earth, the remains of a mountain rising into the sky like poisoned ground after a nuclear blast. It made the shape of a wolf, its tail pointing toward the newly risen sun, its grotesquely elongated snout pointed west, where the night was still draining sullenly from the sky. The snout hung open. Protruding from it was a strange shape, amorphous but somehow reptilian. There was something of the scorpion in that shape, and of the lizard as well. Kantak. Kanta.
Mary screamed through raised hands, looking up at the shape in the sky, eyes bulging over her dirty fingers, head shaking from side to side in a useless gesture of negation.
Stop, David said, and put his arm around her waist. Stop, Mary. It can't hurt us, and it's going away already. See?
It was true. The hide of the sky wolf was tearing open in some places, appearing to melt in others, letting the sunshine through in long golden rays that were both beautiful and somehow comical, the sort of shot you expected to see at the end of a Bible epic.
I think we ought to go, Steve said at last.
I think we never should have come in the first place, Mary said faintly, and got into the car. Already she could smell the aroma of her dead husband's aftershave.
5. David stood watching as she pulled the seat forward and slipped the key into the ignition. He felt distant from himself, a creature floating in space somewhere between a dark star and a light one. He thought of sitting at the kitchen table back home, sitting there and playing slapjacks with Pie. He thought he would see Steve and Mary and Cynthia, nice as they were, dead and in hell, for just one more game of slapjacks in the kitchen with her. Pie with a glass of cranapple juice, him with a Pepsi, both of them giggling like mad. He would see himself in hell, for that matter. How far could it be, after all, from desperation? Mary turned the key in the ignition. The engine cranked briskly and started almost at once. She grinned and clapped her hands.
David, ready to go?
Sure, I guess.
Hey? Cynthia put a hand on the back of his neck. You all right, my man?
He nodded, not looking up.
Cynthia bent over and kissed his cheek. You have to fight it, she whispered in his ear. You have to fight it, you know?
I'll try, he said, but the days and weeks and months ahead looked impossible to him. Go to your friend Brian, Johnny had said. Go to your friend and make him your brother. And that might be a place to start, yes, but after that? There were holes in him that cried out in pain and would go on crying out for so much of the future. One for his mother, one for his father, one for his sister. Holes like faces, holes like eyes. In the sky, the wolf had gone except for a paw and what might have been, perhaps, the tip of a tail. Of the reptilian thing in its mouth, there was no sign.
We beat you, David whispered, starting around to the passenger side of the car. We beat you, you son of a bitch. There's that.
Tack, whispered a smiling, patient voice far back in his mind. Tack-a-la, tack-a-wan. He turned his mind and heart from it with an effort.
Go to your friend and make him your brother.
Maybe, but Austin first, with Mary and Steve and Cynthia. He intended to stay with them as long as possible. They at least could understand, and in a way no one else would be able to. They had been in the pit together. As he reached the passenger side door, he closed the small metal box and slipped it absently into his pocket. He stopped suddenly, free hand frozen in midair as it reached for the door handle. Something was gone, the shotgun shell. Something had been put in its place, a piece of stiff paper.
David, Steve called from the open window of the truck, something wrong?
He shook his head, opening the car door with one hand and taking the folded paper from his pocket with the other. It was blue, and there was something familiar about it, although he couldn't remember having a paper like this in his pocket yesterday. There was a ragged hole in it, as if it had been punched onto something, as if...
Leave your pass.
It was the last thing the voice had said on that day last fall, when he had prayed for God to make Brian better. He hadn't understood, but he had obeyed, had hung the blue pass on a nailhead. The next time he'd shown up at the Viet Cong lookout, a week later, two, it had been gone, taken by some kid who wanted to write down a girl's telephone number, maybe, or blown off by the wind. Except, here it was. All I want is lovin'. All I need is lovin'. Felix Cavalieri on vocal, most severely cool.
No, he thought. This can't be.
David? Mary, far away. David, what is it?
Can't be, he thought again.
But when he unfolded it, the words printed at the top were completely familiar. West Wentworth Middle School, 100 Violand Avenue. Then, in big black tabloid type, excused early. And last of all, parent of excused student must sign this pass. Pass must be returned to attendance office. Except now, there was more. A brief scrawled message below the last line of printing. Something moved inside him, some huge thing. His throat closed up, then opened to let out a long, wailing cry that was only grief at the top. He swayed, clutching at the Acura's roof, lowered his forehead to his arm, and began to sob. From some great distance he heard the truck doors opening, heard Steve and Cynthia racing toward him. He wept. He thought of Pi holding her doll and smiling up at him. He thought of his mother dancing to the radio in the laundry room with the iron in one hand, laughing at her own foolishness. He thought of his father, sitting on the porch with his feet cocked up on the rail, a book in one hand and a beer in the other, waving to him as he came home from Brian's, pushing his bike up the driveway toward the garage in the thick twilight. He thought of how much he had loved them,
how much he would always love them. And Johnny. Johnny standing on the dark edge of the China shaft, saying, "Sometimes he makes us live." David wept with his head down, and the excused early past now crumpled in his closed fist, that huge thing still moving inside him, something like a landslide, but maybe not so bad. Maybe, in the end, not so bad. "David." It was Steve shaking him. "David." "I'm all right," he said, raising his head and wiping his eyes with a shaking hand. "What happened?"
"Nothing. I'm okay. Go on. We'll follow you."
Cynthia was looking at him doubtfully.
"Sure?"
He nodded.
They went back, looking over their shoulders at him. David was able to wave. Then he got into the Acura and closed the door.
"What was it?" Mary asked. "What did you find?"
She reached for the folded piece of stiff blue paper, but David held it in his own hand for the time being.
"Do you remember when the cop threw you into the holding area where we were?" he asked. "How you went for the gun?"
"I'll never forget it."
"While you were fighting with him, a shotgun shell fell off the desk and rolled over to me. When I had a chance, I picked it up. Johnny must have stolen it out of my pocket when he was hanging on to me, in the mine shaft, after my dad was killed. Johnny used the shell to set off the ANFO, and when he took it out of my pocket, he put this in."
"Put what in? What is it?"
"It's an excused early pass from my school back in Ohio. Last fall I poked it on a nail in a tree and left it there."
A tree back in Ohio. Last fall.
She was looking at him thoughtfully, her eyes very large and still.
"Last fall."
"Yes, so I don't know where he got it, and I don't know where he had it. When he was in the powder magazine, I made him empty out all his pockets. I was afraid he might have picked up one of the cantas. He didn't have it then. He stripped right down to his underwear, and he didn't have it then."
"Oh, David," she said.
He nodded and handed the blue pass over to her. "Steve will know if this is his handwriting," he said. "I bet you $1 million it is."
"David, stay ahead of the mummy. 1 John 4:8. Remember."
She read the scrawled message, her lips moving. "I'd bet $1 million of my own that it's his, if I had $1 million, she said. "Do you understand the reference, David?"
David took the blue pass.
"Of course. 1 John 4:8. God is love."
She looked at him for a long time.
"Is he, David? Is he love?"
"Oh, yes," David said. He folded the pass along its crease. "I guess he's sort of everything."
Cynthia waved. Mary waved back and gave her a thumbs up. Steve pulled out, and Mary followed him, the Acura's wheels rolling reluctantly through the first ridge of sand and then picking up speed. David put his head back against the seat, closed his eyes, and began to pray.
The End.